Samsung Electronics reported a 56% drop in profit for its second quarter, with losses in both its chip and mobile businesses. That after a drop in prices of semiconductors owing to oversupply. Shares in the company fell more than 3% after the news. But the South Korean giant said it expected the chip market to start to recover in the second half of the year.
Facebook announced it disabled a network of fake accounts and pages run by people connected to Saudi Arabia, promoting state propaganda and attacking regional rivals like Qatar. The first such activity Facebook has linked to the Saudi government. In all, more than 350 accounts and pages were suspended, most of them on Facebook and Instagram, with about 1.4 million followers.
You may know Amazon is trying to get customers their packages through the sky or with these sidewalk robots. But Amazon's ambition in transportation is bigger and broader than just innovative deliveries. The online retail giant has been knitting together a multi-billion dollar global transportation ecosystem that could one day rival players from UPS to Uber.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's August the 5th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business week, another business day getting underway, and there is lots going on in the world of business this morning. We're going to try to get to as much of it as possible. We'll get to the latest market numbers momentarily. There is some major news in the trade war with China this morning. Chinese valuation of its currency in the spotlight this morning as well. On the program today, we'll focus in on the Siskel Film Center in Chicago, the Gene Siskel Film Center in Chicago. Gene de St. Aubin will be here. The executive director of the Film Center will be with us shortly here in just a few minutes. A little bit later this morning, Dan Petrella, reporter at the Chicago Tribune, is here. We're going to be breaking down the progressive tax, Illinois tax by zip code. We'll tell you which zip codes will be paying the most, potentially. And also, Illinois film credits have been extended to keep companies filming in Chicago. We'll talk to Dan about that at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The markets around the globe are all negative this morning in a big way as well. In the U.S., futures are pointing toward opening losses of nearly 1% on the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P. NASDAQ futures off nearly 1.5% this morning. Dow futures down 278 points. NASDAQ futures are off nearly 116 points. Around the globe this morning in Asia, in Japan, and in Hong Kong and in China, markets are considerably lower. In Hong Kong by nearly 3%, in China by nearly 1.5%. And in Europe, in London, down almost 1.75%. The FTSE off nearly 129 points. In Germany, off nearly 1.5%. In France, off more than 1.5%. And oil is trading at $55.27 a barrel. So what's going on? Why is all this happening? Well, the Chinese government this morning has directed its state-owned enterprises to suspend imports of U.S. agricultural products after Trump ratcheted up trade tensions last week, imposing 10% tariffs on another $300 billion worth of Chinese goods. Also, the Chinese currency has weakened past the psychologically important point of 7 to the American dollar for the first time in more than a decade, a move that, again, reflects the growing severity of the trade war with the U.S., both of these moves signaling that perhaps China is willing to dig itself in the fight against the United States. But the White House is issuing a message on Fox News Sunday yesterday. The trade advisor, Peter Navarro, said China must end the 7 deadly sins before the ongoing trade war with the U.S. can come to an end. He described the so-called sins as stealing our intellectual property, forcing technology transfers, hacking our computers, dumping into our markets, causing companies to go out of business, heavy subsidies, the importation of fentanyl, and currency manipulation. The president has characterized tariffs on China as a tax on China, but economists say that that is actually more of a tax on U.S. consumers. You can see the reaction of China to all of this again this morning with the agricultural announcement and the currency moves there this morning. As we look at some other stories making news this morning, oil prices are down more than 1% as these tariffs go into effect or prepare to go into effect. Again, all of this worrying investors on a number of different front. Oil is no different. Benchmark crude oil down 73 cents a barrel to $61.16. West Texas Intermediate crude down 62 cents. President announced those tariffs on Thursday. And a lot has happened in the meantime. Amazon is making it easier to find the right style with your very own personal shopper. The service just launched for Prime members, and it's only $5 a month. It's called the Personal Shopper by Prime Wardrobe. All you have to do is fill out style profiles, and within days you'll get suggestions from fashion stylist. Choose up to 8 items and wait for them to be delivered. You have up to 7 days to make returns and only pay for what you keep. Let's begin front and center this morning with the Gene Siskel Film Center in Chicago. The Film Center has been presenting world-class independent, international, and classical films since 1972, and it's getting ready now. It's all underway for the 25th annual Black Harvest Film Festival that began over the weekend. Gene de St. Aubin is the executive director of the Gene Siskel Film Center in Chicago and is with us this morning here on the Opening Bell. Gene, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We want to talk about a number of different things today, about you and your background, about the Siskel Film Center. Let's begin by talking about what's new. What's happening that's new in your world?
The most exciting thing right now is Saturday, August 3rd, we opened the 25th anniversary of the Black Harvest Film Festival, which is a big deal. And it's now considered one of the top 3 black film festivals in the country. And to celebrate, we've been doing it for 25 years. It's grown every year. 2 years ago, we started thinking we have to do something special for the 25th. And so the team, the staff there, decided we should commission 5 new short films from emerging black filmmakers. So we got funding from some local foundations, and we put out a call for proposals. 5 filmmakers were chosen, and those films all premiered on Saturday night. And so that's, a lot of what we do every year. So every year we have to think of ways to make them fresh and more exciting so people feel like, they have to come. They mm-hmm. have to come back.
Those movies celebrating black life, black stories, black culture, there's no shortage of stories, is there?
No. I mean, and the 5 films from opening night really showed not only the range of stories, but also the range of filmmaking. We never talk about the range of white films. It's just there's a lot of different stories out there. And it's the same thing with black films. There's a lot of different stories, a lot of different perspectives, a lot of people looking at things from different angles, and a lot of people's experiences in the world are very different.
All of these stories have a Chicago connection.
Really. The festival, because Chicago is such a, we have such a history of black filmmaking here, going back to Oscar Micheaux, years ago. I think that was the 30s, and I could be wrong, but I'm not sure. A lot of the filmmakers who are presented in the Black Harvest Film Festival may have gone to school here. They may have grown up here. But a lot of them have no connection. Some of them, we have a film from Tanzania. We have a lot of films from California and New York. We've had films from Haiti. So we look for films from all over the world. It just happens that, we love supporting local filmmakers. It's something that the Gene Siskel Film Center has really concentrated on in the last couple of years. So there is a large portion of local filmmakers, but we want to show things from all over the world.
The festival runs through the 29th. Talk to us a little bit more about the history of this with Chicago. Why is it that Chicago has this rich culture and history in movie making like this?
That, I don't know. That's a very good question. Yeah. It could be that, there's always been a lot of black creativity in Chicago. We have great universities and colleges that have film programs. And I think, us and other institutions have really supported it. So it's thrived.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us before we move on to some other stuff about, again, how people can take part in it. Is tickets are online? And
The tickets are on the Gene Siskel Film Center's website, which is siskelfilmcenter.org. And, it's right there on the homepage. You can look at the whole schedule. There's over 40 films this year, 17 feature-length films, and then the rest are short films.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about you and your leadership of the organization. Talk to us about what you do and what your daily challenges are.
I've been there 16 years. I don't really like talking about I'm not used to talking about myself. So our challenges are always, raising money because mm-hmm. we don't want our ticket price to be too high so people can't come. You know, we look at our programming as high quality cultural programming that's accessible because of our location and our price. General admission tickets only $12. But that nowhere near covers the cost of operations, of renting and shipping the films, of staff salaries, of, keeping the lights on and all that kind of thing. So a lot of what my biggest challenge is always raising money.
Since 1972, and I think 1972 was the mm-hmm. first year, how has the Film Center advanced in those years, changed?
Oh my goodness. I mean, it started out with just a couple screenings a week. In an auditorium at the museum, and then it moved over into a larger auditorium at the School of the Art Institute on Columbus Drive. It was only open for like 5 days a week. When we moved into our new location on State Street, we now have two screens. We're open 7 days a week. So we show over 400 different movies a year in 1,600 presentations. Wow. And we have about 200 visiting filmmakers, archivists, historians, critics for talks, with the films. And
if I'm correct, didn't the beginnings of it begin with a grant from the National Endowment for the
Yes.
Arts?
Yes. So our founder, Camille Cook, had been showing films actually in the Tribune Tower. They had a little screening room, and she was showing like one night a month or something. And one night it was sort of a racy film, and the projectionist complained to the bosses that there was nudity or whatever, and she was kicked out. So she took her screenings to the basement of the MCA when the Museum of Contemporary Art was on Ontario. And then she heard through the grapevine and through other, film centers throughout the country that the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, thought it was very important that all major cities had a cinematheque. And so they were giving seed money. They were giving $50,000 per city. But they wanted each institution to be connected, each cinematheque to be connected to a larger institution. So she went to the School of the Art Institute and said, would you house us? And they said yes. And that's how it began.
Yeah, and that's where the history comes in.
That's where it started.
And so when anybody questions the importance of NEA grants, that you bring up this example, it's a good one, right?
Right. Yeah, we wouldn't be here. And a lot of places, the Pacific Film Archive in San Francisco wouldn't be there. I mean, there'd be a lot of places that wouldn't be in business.
You talk about the challenges of raising money, but I look back at the gala this year and the names that you had coming in to support John Favreau, Robert Downey Jr. These are big, huge names that came in to support you.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We're extremely fortunate. Robert Downey Jr.'s wife, Susan, grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and we kind of reconnected with her through her mother, is a friend of our board chair, and we're able to get Susan and Robert on our advisory board. So they help us every year reach out to different people to honor. We give them this is who we want to honor, and then that's their job is to get them. And we love John Favreau. We love Robert also. But John, 10 years ago, we honored George Lucas, and John Favreau interviewed him. And it was a really interesting conversation between these two men who are extremely invested in storytelling of all kinds. And it got very mystical and at a very high level. And so this year when we honored him, Robert Downey Jr. interviewed him. And it was a perfect pairing of a very cerebral, thoughtful Jon Favreau, and a showman who really knows how to get questions and get answers out of Jon, but also entertain the audience. So it was. Mm-hmm. It was insane.
Right.
That's all
and,
I can say.
they bring with them big wallets, right? There are people that come to see this with big wallets.
It's people in Chicago who support the Film Center and want to hear what they have to say and want to be in the same room with them. So the corporate community and the philanthropic community of Chicago have been very supportive of the gala.
Talk to us about the namesake, the Gene Siskel and his involvement.
So... we named it the Gene Siskel Film Center at the same time that we were moving from our auditorium at the School of the Art Institute on Columbus Drive. We were moving into State Street. And it was the same time that Gene passed away. And Gene was very famous for saying the three best things about Chicago are Mayor Daley, and I think it was the old Mayor Daley at the time, Mayor Daley, the Chicago Bulls, or Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, and the Film Center of the School of the Art Institute. So we decided to name it after him to honor his legacy.
And I, and both hands, both feet, and a couple of other people in their hands and feet too, the number of people who were inspired to be in movies by Gene Siskel.
Oh, a lot. A lot of the people that we've brought in to honor will talk about how they learned about movies from watching the Siskel and Ebert show. I mean, it really had a national impact.
You talked about the challenges of fundraising. Give us a sense of what it takes to operate the Gene Siskel Film Center. You don't have to open up your books to us this morning, but just how challenging is it?
What we consider earned income is box office revenue and membership. That's about 49% of our operating budget. So basically half of what we need to operate, we have to raise. So that's a fair amount of money. Uh-huh. But we get it, you know, through the gala is a big part of that. We also have foundation grants and government grants, such as the NEA, and a lot of individual contributions.
What are the trends in the movies these days? Are people going less to see movies, and are they seeing less commercial movies and more of the art films that we might find at the Siskel Film Center, or what do we have there?
Well, you know, I think there's somebody for every movie, almost any good movie. So I think we've been very good at building an audience of people who like stories that are thoughtful, that are based on character development, and bring you to different places and different eras and. You know, they're a little bit more personal, maybe. Then there's a big audience that wants that really loves the superhero movies with blowing up and the special effects and all that kind of thing. But in a way, they both have a lot in common. We were talking about this earlier. It's all about storytelling. It's just different ways of storytelling. And I think there's an audience for all of it.
But what do they say? What's the... phrase that people in the movie business to talk about butts and seats, is that it?
Yeah. and actually, you know, this from January to June, attendance was not so great. I felt a little bit better when I talked to my friends who are in live theater, and they said it was the same. Everybody, it was an awful winter in Chicago. It was a really long spring. Mm. And the last few weeks have been great. So that's kind of good. Mm-hmm. But so weather, there's so many things that impact it. Weather, what else is happening in the city? You know, definitely TV is a competitor. We are living in the golden age of TV. Mm. But our way to combat that is to have as many guest speakers and filmmaker appearances and events around our films so that the films are put into kind of a context. When you can see a movie and then talk to the director or meet a critic, it gives you so much more than just sitting on your couch and watching a movie. I think it's also really important. I mean, we're a film center. I think it's very important for filmmakers to interact with an audience. It really helps their artistic growth. If they make a movie and it just goes into you know, a million living rooms. Mm-hmm. They have no idea when people are laughing, crying, how they're reacting. But when they're in a theater with them, they can really see how their really hard work, their artistic expression is being received. And I think that's really crucial.
One of the interesting trends that I have been following very closely, that is the Netflix versus the theaters aspect of this and the Academy Awards and the involvement of the Academy Awards. Netflix is spending lots of money on film production and some really good film production at that.
Right.
But they may not get an Academy Award for it.
Yeah, I think we were also talking about this earlier. I think, you know, the Academy may have to create another category. I don't think they'll ever change, and I don't think they should change, that to be nominated for an Oscar, you have to have a theatrical release. You have to be in a theater seen by the general public. Mm-hmm. You can't just be out in people's living rooms and then be up for an Oscar. It has to be this more public experience. But, you know, if it happens at the same time or a week difference, that it's, you know, released in theaters one week and the next week it's on Netflix, that's kind of what the question is. I think they'll probably allow it, maybe create another category. But even if they don't, it's not going to change anything. Netflix, Showtime, Amazon, they're all going to continue making new content.
Is Netflix competitive with the movie companies? Because I'd heard some statistics that Netflix may be getting ready to spend even more than some movie companies in producing movies.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I know, because when you think that every time they're getting money every month from people's subscription, I mean, their revenue stream is so much different than what, you know, the studios, when they're going into theaters. It's a very different thing. And they almost have guaranteed revenue.
Yeah.
Nobody else has guaranteed revenue.
What's the vision for the Film Center? If you had to look ahead a couple of years or 5 years, is there a future plan?
Yeah, I mean, I would really like to see us to continue to grow, to continue to really support local filmmakers. It's been an interesting and rewarding experience to commission new work. It would be wonderful if we could do that annually. I've already had a lot of filmmakers ask me, are you going to do it again next year? But it's an expensive endeavor. I mean, making a film, even if it's a 10-minute film, it's not cheap. So we would love to do more of that. We'd love to, you know, keep bringing in filmmakers and have conversations. And we look at our programming and our space as kind of a third place. You know, the whole bowling alone concept where, you know, people have their work life, their home life, and you need a third place. You need a place where you can just, like, be yourself, mm-hmm. hang, and we're that place for a lot of people. And we have so many regulars, so I would love to build our regulars. I would love to have five times as many of the regulars that we have. They're loyal. They're there all the time. They don't love all the movies, but they keep coming.
If somebody's out and they're listening and they haven't been to the Film Center or they're interested now in becoming a new supporter, how best can they do that?
The best thing is, I mean, we kind of look at it as a pyramid. Come to a movie, buy a ticket, come to a movie. If you like it, become a member. Membership is only $50. And then every time you see a movie, it's only $6, which is a pretty good deal. And you get free popcorn. So, and I think the popcorn is what sells it.
Right.
And then if you really like it, then, you know, you can contribute, which we are extremely grateful for. And when we kind of move people up the chain, you know, to be on our advisory board, to be on one of our many, we have a junior board, we have a Black Harvest Community Council, we have a Panorama Latinx Community Council. So we have a lot of different ways to be involved in the Film Center. And it's not all money related. You know, there's a lot of other ways. I mean, we need advocates as much as we need resources.
Well, Jean, thank you for coming in this morning, and all the best to everybody at the Film Center.
Thank you.
Jean DeSaint-Aubin, Executive Director of the Jean Siskel Film Center. Remember, the 25th anniversary of the Black Harvest Film Festival is underway. through August 29th at the Film Center. You can find more online at siskelfilmcenter.org. And we'll continue our conversation with Gene DeSaint Aubin after the bell this morning, and we'll post more of that in the podcast of our program at WGNradio.com a little bit later this morning.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. The state of Illinois has extended film credits credits to keep productions in Illinois. That announcement last week. There's also been some analysis of the graduated income tax plan in Illinois and where people will be paying the most for that. Both of these stories being reported by Dan Petrella at the Chicago Tribune. Dan is with us this morning. Dan, thanks for being on the program. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with the film part of this, because it'll sort of go with our earlier discussion this morning with the Gene Siskel Film Center Executive Director this morning. The state extending these film tax credits, this announcement coming last week, it's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's been fairly successful in helping grow the film industry here in Illinois. You know, anybody who walks around downtown has probably seen one of Dick Wolf's Chicago shows shooting at locations around or other film productions. I know outside our new offices at the Prudential Building, from time to time, streets are shut down for filming. And so, you know, these tax credits let people get about a 30% credit on their taxes for production costs and for salaries of people up to $100,000. So that's a lot of people working behind the camera.
How big of a deal is this to some of these production companies to get this kind of a credit?
Well, Dick Wolf of Law & Order fame and the executive producer of those shows like Chicago Fire and Chicago PD was at the news conference where Pritzker signed this bill into law. And he, you know, said that he had had a conversation with the governor earlier this year, where he basically told him that, you know, if the tax credits expire, which they were set to do in 2021, that those programs would have to go shoot somewhere else, because it's just that important to making the math work for his bosses at NBC Universal.
Yeah, that's a big deal. How, Dan, how does Illinois size up with all of the other states that are competing in this arena? I know Georgia is a big deal with Atlanta. Are we competitive now with those states?
We're trying to be, for sure. I'm not sure exactly where we rank in terms of the number of productions, but I do know, you know, there's been about a 12% increase from 2017 to 2018 in the amount of spending that the film industry does here in Illinois. And Governor Pritzker has said that they're really going to try and go after some of the productions that are considering whether to stay in Georgia because of the new restrictive abortion law that takes effect next year. Some production companies have said they're considering whether to move, and a couple, I believe, have already decided to change locations.
Yeah, it's always nice seeing Chicago and Illinois in some of these films, so let's hope that continues. The credits extended until 26. I know your story also talked about the possibility we might get another movie studio in Chicago in addition to the Dick Wolf production set.
Yes, yeah. My colleague Ryan Ory, who works for our business section at the Tribune, had a story a week or so ago about the Chicago actor and rapper Common and a group of developers looking at the U.S. Steel Southworks site as a potential home for a future movie studio and other development that can include entertainment venues and things like that. So something that could bring some life to that long dormant site, and the governor spoke favorably of that idea.
Some of your other reporting, I know one of this story really caught our eye last week, and I know a lot of people are paying attention to it. A zip code breakdown of the graduated income tax plan in Illinois, the zip codes where people are going to be paying some of these higher taxes. Talk about this to us a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, this is something, you know, when Governor Pritzker first introduced his rates, you know, he'd been campaigning on this idea of taxing higher incomes at higher rates, but wasn't until the spring, a few months after he took office, that he showed what that would look like. And we wanted to know, you know, where is this going to have the most impact? Where are the most people going to be paying more? Because people all across the state under his plan would actually get a small tax break, people earning less than $250,000 a year. But we wanted to see, you know, where do the people who are going to be paying more live? And so we went back and forth with the state for a couple months trying to get this data, and finally did. And it showed what you might expect. You know, a lot of the places where people are going to pay more are zip codes in Lincoln Park and Wilmette and Barrington and places like that. But what was most interesting, I thought, was that there are 15 zip codes across the state where about a quarter of the people who would pay more under this plan live. And that's out of a total of 1,500 zip codes. So it's really, you know, a small segment of the population who, at least under the rates that would take effect if voters approved this in 2020, would be paying more right away.
Yeah, so and that's sort of one of the big headlines here, right? That most people are not going to be impacted by this. I know I'd seen some reporting about people in downstate Illinois were concerned about the impact of this, but this reporting makes it look like the Chicago area is going to take the brunt of it.
It is, for sure. You know, about 85% of the people who would pay more live in Chicago and Cook County and the McKellar counties, and that's about home to about two-thirds of the state's population. So it's a disproportionate amount of the money would be coming from the Chicago area. And there are many counties downstate where hardly anyone would be paying more under this plan.
Is that going to impact the political fight over this? Is this reporting in these findings? I know Republicans have tried to make this a big issue, trying to make it a wedge issue, trying to fight the graduated income tax. So talk to us a little bit about whether this is going to play more in favor or against.
Well, you know, on the surface, you would think it would, but the argument that the Republicans are really trying to make is that the rates that Governor Pritzker signed into law earlier this summer that will take effect if voters approve a change to the Constitution in 2020 are sort of like introductory rates. And at some point, the state's going to realize that even this doesn't bring in enough money, and then they're going to have to lower the threshold for where these rates start kicking in. And that's the Republican argument and the argument of other opponents. And they're kind of really playing off this distrust that people have, some might say well-earned, of politicians in Springfield. And, you know, can you trust that these rates that they've put in law are going to be the rates for a long time, or are they going to have to raise rates on more people down the line?
Yeah, and the small number of people impacted by that top tier, that would lend a little bit of credence to that argument.
Well, and you know, there's some people in the Democratic Party, people who are supporters of this, who will tell you that it, you know, will be very helpful and they're very supportive. But really, if you wanted to go at some of the state's problems, especially high property taxes, you have to raise even more from the income tax to be able to start lowering people's property taxes.
Anything else surprise you as you started looking through this data?
You know, there were a couple zip codes around places like Peoria and Decatur and Springfield where there was a higher percentage of people that would be paying more than I would have thought. Another interesting thing, after I got this data and wrote the story, I got some data on sort of a legislative district by legislative district breakdown of where the people who would be paying more are. And it's you know, the majority of the people who will be paying more live in districts that right now are represented by Democrats. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out politically in the 2020 election.
Well, Dan, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Dan Petrella from the Chicago Tribune. We're going to link out to his stories on both of these stories, both of these topics this morning with the podcast of The Opening Bell at WGNRadio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, lots of red on the screens this morning around the globe and in the United States. Dow futures are off 319 points this morning, nearly 1.25%. Same story over at the S&P. The futures there off nearly 1.33% now. NASDAQ futures off nearly 1.75%. A rough night in Asia, and it is ongoing in Europe as well. Markets off anywhere from 2 to 3% around the globe. Trade concerns, the top issue this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We start this week with pretty good news for American beef producers because the announcement on Friday that we now have a deal to sell more American beef to Europe. That's a modest win for the administration that still is mired in the trade war with China, but tariffs on European auto exports remain a possibility. But it's good news for cattle producers in the United States because the beef deal could help alleviate some of the damage to the domestic agricultural industry because of tariffs that Beijing has imposed on U.S. products in retaliation for U.S. levies on China. And we stay abroad for more agricultural news. Japan and the United States have agreed to target a broad deal on bilateral trade by September, seeking to bridge differences of opinion over tariffs on beef and the automobile sector. That, according to a Japanese newspaper report on Sunday. And China's economy not doing as well as it should be. China's top services sector expanded at the slowest pace in 5 months in July, despite a rather sharp upturn of new export orders. That according to a private survey yesterday. Now, we get into the farm show season this week, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, Farm Fest in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. I'll be there tomorrow, and the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee from Minnesota, Mr. Peterson, will be there on Wednesday. And then on Wednesday, I'll be at the Boone County Fair in Belvedere, Illinois. Come out and celebrate a great county fair. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A couple more stories before we leave you this morning. Development in the mass shootings from the weekend. Cybersecurity company Cloudflare has said it has terminated services to online message board 8chan after the suspected gunman in the El Paso shooting appeared to have used that website before he went on a rampage. The shooter apparently posted some sort of manifesto of sorts before opening fire at the Walmart in El Paso, Texas, which left at least 20 people dead and another 26 wounded. The post was deleted from 8chan's forums after the shooting started, but forum users archived the document, which contained a link to the PDF version. The company says that there has been a violation of terms, if not by the letter of the law, certainly by spirit of the rules at 8chan. A survey shows that a sharp downturn in Germany's manufacturing sector is weighing heavily on the 19-country Eurozone economy. Financial data firm IHS Markit says that its monthly index of the manufacturing and services sector fell to 51.5 points in July from 52.2 the previous month. The fall takes the index close to the 50-point threshold that separates a fall in business activity from an increase. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, August the 5th. Vehicle sales for July are due out today. Auto industry analysts see sales losing some ground. The forecast coming at an annual rate of about 1.7, make that 17.1 million vehicles, down slightly from June's 17.3. Also today, the U.S. ISM non-manufacturing index will get some earnings today from Tyson Foods and Marriott, among others. And those are some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, August the 5th.